there's not much space for people to be thinking about what can I be doing differently. So much of what we do in schools is just a routine. So when we are trying to do change, we're trying to implement something new, you can't just start with the new thing. You actually have to start with a goal.
Welcome to Schoolin' Around, a podcast hosted by Branching Minds featuring prominent leaders, subject matter experts, and thought innovators with their perspectives on the current challenges facing K-12 education. I'm your host, Larissa Napolitan, a former teacher, instructional coach, and a member of the Branching Minds team, here to lead conversations with educational leaders and experts. My hope is to share with you not only valuable insights and knowledge from leaders in education, but have fun while doing it and shine a light on phenomenal educators and those that are on a mission to transform our schools and the lives of students. Educational leaders are working hard to make their schools great, often running into many challenges like getting others to agree on what needs to change. And change is hard, especially in an established school system with long-held beliefs, traditions, or struggles. Today on the podcast, we are talking about why change is so hard and how leaders can build their skills in root cause analysis and strategic thinking. Our guest today, Sima Ringgold, works with schools and leaders all over the country, helping teams walk through the process of large-scale change, whether that's implementing an MTSS or a curriculum overhaul. Over the last 10 years, as a strategy and operations consultant, Sima has facilitated in-depth strategic planning engagements with superintendents to radically redesign policies, practices, and organizational structures so that the vision for the future can become a reality today. She specializes in community-centered design, leveraging student and educator feedback to guide district-level decision-making while uncovering new and unique ways to solve persistent challenges. I hope you enjoy our conversation. I'm excited to have a conversation with Sima Ringgold, who is a strategy ops consultant specializing in education, and she does a lot of work around strategic planning and helping leaders manage projects. And she is the one that they call upon to help make change happen. And so I'm just so excited to have her on the podcast and just talk about why change is hard. So Sima, why is change hard?
Change is actually not that difficult because you and I are able to like implement change every single day in our lives, but deliberate coordinated change across an entire school district, that's really difficult. It's super complex many times because there are just so many people who have priorities that they're doing every single day in their personal lives and in their schools. So teachers every single morning are waking up and thinking about what should I be doing today that is best for my kids. They're thinking about the stuff that is on the calendar already, the tests that are coming up, the school assemblies, the Friday night activity, like everything is like taking up most of the brain space of not just the leaders, but everyone who is operating and working within a school. And so there's not much space for people to be thinking about what can I be doing differently. So much of what we do in schools is just a routine. So when we are trying to do change, we're trying to implement something new, you can't just start with the new thing. You actually have to start with a goal. You have to start with knowing what's going to be like the vision for the future. And then every individual is going to have to do something a little bit different within a school, within a district in order to make that change happen. And a lot of times we don't necessarily know the answers to everyone's questions when we have to start building change. And so that's really difficult.
I like your point about how like everybody has other things going on. Like there is lots of stuff still continue has to happen. And so we can't like just stop everything to make the change. Like we continue have to like, yeah, be the kids show up every day to like be helped and to be supportive. And so like when you're trying to change stuff, like you can't ask people just to stop what they're doing to make change happen. And so like, I feel like oftentimes that's why it's hard, because there are so many moving parts to an educational, it's an ecosystem in a way. Like there's so many people dependent on like just, you know, if there's not a custodian, like the custodian and the people in the office and, you know, all of the different parts of a school is dependent on each other. And so I think that that's really key when you understand that like change has to be like, it's big and it's small too. So
100%. And we don't actually we don't do a great job in education of documenting what the status quo is. We noticed this most when we were living through the pandemic and we had to come up with new processes and procedures and policies like on the fly throughout spring 2020, and especially when it came to back to school 2021, 2022. And like we didn't know what the norm was, what the typical was for most teachers and folks that are working within schools. And then so then to prescribe that you have to do something differently because you have to separate desks, you have to have hybrid education, all of that stuff, we had to first take a moment, and I did this with districts, to document what would happen in a normal school year for us then to identify what would need to happen this school year for us then to understand what is the difference, i.e. what is the change, and then who needs to be implementing that change. And that's very different from when a parent comes in and asks a question or a school board member comes in and asks a question, like, what are you going to be doing differently? There were like 10 steps that a school district needed to investigate before they were able to really answer that question.
Yeah. Well, and it's one of those things where like, you know, I was just thinking about just like the change that we had to make to, you know, do hybrid education, right? Like that impacted the amount of furniture that's in a classroom, right? Like, and having to remove some of that, or, you know, it meant
how many kids we could fit on a bus.
How many kids you could fit on a bus, how many kids you could put in the cafeteria, how many, like what the hallway transitions look like. There are so many little things and it's like a ripple effect. And so like you had to have someone to move that furniture. You had to have someone to like put down the stickers in the hallway. And like, and so everybody had to be a part of those like little things, and it impacted a lot of different ways. And so I think that with any change of like trying to make transformation happen, like there are things you don't even think of in the moment that you will later find out. Because I mean, I just remember going back to school and they're like, well, what about, you know, all the teachers started bringing up stuff about like, well, what about this? What about the bathrooms? What about lockers? What about, you know, all these things that maybe people hadn't started to think through until like we were in. And sometimes we had to make decisions after the fact of like, oh, well, this, now we have to do this. And here's another thing that changes. So.
And when everything is changing, people also, like, I notice this in myself, is like, I'm so scared to fail, right? There's something new I'm supposed to be doing. And I want to, like, I have a desire to follow the direct, like, especially when it's something so big, like hype, like when we were coming back from the pandemic, like I didn't want to get sick. I wanted to make sure my kids were still learning. There were so many big things that are in the front of the brain of a principal and of a teacher that like get so scared to make a mistake. I get so scared to fail. And the reality is that when we're changing stuff, failure happens all of the time. And it is about talking about it and being able to move forward pretty quickly, easily, seamlessly, learning from that failure and like continuing on in the process.
Oh, I agree. And I think that there's such a, it feels like the pressure is a lot like heavier when you're in the midst of change, because, and I always think that that's why like the leaders bore a lot of that responsibility as they made decisions moving forward. And I think that like in any change, because it's like people will look to be like, well, you decided to do this, or like, you know, or, and I think that that's, it's so hard because you're right. Like there are going to be just things that you don't anticipate because you're not perfect. Like no one can like see the future and anticipate the ripple effect of a change. I mean, you can do the best that you can in that way, but like, I think there has to be a lot of grace that happens when you're like, making a change. And I think when, especially like school district level, you know, when you're implementing something new, like let's say like MTSS or a big new framework or something, there has to be a level of grace that we're like, this is somewhere we've never been before and we aren't going to anticipate every need, and we have to have grace for everyone. And I think grace allows space for questions and curiosity and trying just to understand.
It takes a lot of vulnerability. I know that's like a very pop hit word right now, but to be able to say, I don't have all the answers. Most times when someone is elevated within a district to a position of leadership and power, if they're overseeing an MTSS implementation, they're overseeing a new curriculum adoption, they're overseeing a new something new for a new population or a new project, like they are put in that role because they are ostensibly the expert. And if I am the expert, I think a lot of times we confuse that with I'm supposed to have all of the answers. And the reality is that we never know, like the variable of putting that change, even if I've done it 100 times before, even if I was hired into a school district because I did successfully somewhere else, there will always be new variables. And most change projects that school districts undertake are not that one-time huge new implementation. It's a daily, I have learned from a new data set. We have learned because we are now looking at our iReady data differently. We're now looking at our data that's coming out of the state differently. And now that I can say, okay, now that X is happening in our classrooms, how do we turn that learning? What exactly am I supposed to be learning? And how do I turn that into action? And then that action is going to be change. And I think when you were saying earlier about there being lots of like skepticism that's happening potentially across all of your users, across even your students and your families. And when I say users, I mean like the folks that are going to be accepting that change. Like they can be questioning it at every level. They'll start questioning it at, why are we doing this? Why are we doing it this way? Why do I have to do it this way? Everything was fine in my classroom beforehand. My kids were this, me. And so people are very resistant. But it's not just that they're resistant to the change. They become very resistant to what was the initial problem? And do I even believe that that was the problem? And like one of the big things that I know you and I like have talked about in the past is like really getting confidence in yourself that you understand what the problem is as a leader, or and that you're able to communicate that out, because everybody in the room, everybody a part of the district, even the parents, even your school board members, they need to be bought into what is the problem we're trying to solve. And that like that can take, it may take a leader maybe a few different pieces of data and a little bit of conversation with other leaders to like get to that place. It can take a school maybe 6 months of principal meetings in order to get to that same level of understanding and commitment and bought into, this is a problem we need to solve now.
Well, and I think that that's true, is that recognizing, because I think everyone brings their own perspective of what really is the problem, right? Like I could see that as, I can think about like one example from my experience is like 1 year, like there was just the, you know, a lot of teachers felt like the disrespect from kids in the hallway, really the problem was kids wearing hats and hoodies. Like that's one perspective, but like really the principal saw it as like, actually we need to have people in the hallway and supervising. Like that's more of the issue than like, you know, and so like everyone brought their own perspective of what the real problem was. And so like, you're right in that everyone kind of agreeing about like, this is the pain point that we need to solve, or this is the problem that we need to make change to address, is really important. And to bring like data instead of, and like actual data instead of just anecdotal experience, even though that anecdotal experience is really real, it's even more real when you can say like everyone else is experiencing the same thing. And here's the data to back that up of like, you know, our kids need help in this area. Here's the evidence that they do, you know.
And that root cause analysis is tough. Like I lead strategic planning workshops. I bring large groups of people through a collective problem identification process and getting down to the root cause is consistently my, like, the hardest thing for me as a facilitator, for the team, because a lot of times we get to something so big. If the root cause is something that's like so big, like, we're never going to be able to solve it. And a lot of times the root cause is external, honestly, to the stuff that we have control over within a school. So like, we can't solve that. We can't solve something that's so big. We can maybe start talking about it out in the community. We now know that building awareness around certain really large challenges within our community, within our families, within our schools, like starting to identify here's a challenge is the first step to solving a problem. But it's the root cause. I mean, I put it at the end of my workshops for a reason, because it is so hard for everyone. It's like, it's a little bit of a downer sometimes too, because we get to a root cause that we can't solve as a school district. And then everyone's like, there's no point in this. So there's like a fine line of finding what is the root cause that we can actually take action on within the school. And then recognizing what could be my role. And a lot of people really try to jump really quickly into solutions. And part of why I think strategic planning and planning and change is so difficult is that solutions come much further down the line. It's so much more in the beginning about understanding what our current state is, identifying a problem, investigating a root cause, designing and defining what the future state's going to be. What is that we are all going to be shooting our arrows towards? And then once we identify that as an entire group, we have buy-in on all of those levels, that's when we can start figuring out, okay, where are we at today? Where do we want to go? What's that gap and how do we close it? And that's where the solution comes in. But that's so far down, and many times people just want to jump to the solution, which I get. It's easier. We have to be so solution oriented in our classrooms every single day. We have to be solution oriented with our families every day. And so we jump there, but for a really big change, a really big strategic implementation, like a new MTSS, we cannot just jump to the solution.
Well, because I feel like then the solution doesn't actually make the kind of impact that you want it to make. It addresses maybe surface level issues, or on the surface, it looks great, but like it won't last a year, you know, because you don't have that buy-in. You don't have that like buy-in at every level, because if you don't have all your stakeholders bought in, like you're doing it. I often think like that kind of change is just for naught. Like it won't make the difference that you want it to make. And it almost might do more damage, like in the sense that like making the problem worse, or you push out, you know, stakeholders, teachers, administrators that really need to like buy in. And I don't know. I just always feel like if you have your teachers and your administrators and your parents on your side, like those things will, like it will happen a lot quicker too. I think sometimes like those than you think. But
it's like, I do not have a green thumb, so I'm about to use an analogy that I am probably woefully underprepared to use. But I can imagine that if I were to start growing things, that I would need to spend a lot of time making sure I have the right soil. Right? That I have the right sunlight, I have the right water, and then I'm planting the seed. And that is what I notice in schools is that we want to jump, okay, I see the tree that I want the seed to grow into. That's the solution. And then we don't know how to bring it through from what is the soil, like what are all of the enabling factors that need to be true, all of the conditions for success. And I'm using some like big terms that most of your listeners will understand, but like we have to set that together. And doing that in a room alone, a leader is not going, like we cannot name conditions for success as a single human trying to bring about change in a system. We have to name that together. We cannot like, and so all of that has to become part of the discussion. And I like, you know, maybe I'm thinking more and more as we're going through this is that we have to kind of distract people away from jumping to the solution and distract them through really engaging conversations around what the urgency is, around what the problem is, around what our future vision and goals are, around what roles each of us can take in order to be a leader in this. We kind of have to distract folks with really robust conversation that gets us the information necessary so that then we can design the solution together. And like something I talk a lot to leaders about is like, you actually don't need to design the solution with all of your stakeholders. We need to understand stakeholder. Like we need to understand them. We need to understand what motivates stakeholders. We have to understand what, like, yeah, what drives them to do what they do every single day. We have to understand what their workload is, what's on their plate, all of that stuff. But part of the design process really is bringing together a much smaller group. And that can be hard because we want to involve everyone all the time, or we want to involve no one. And you kind of have to find a middle ground between those two.
Yeah. Well, and I also think that part of understanding your stakeholders is really like knowing them, like spending time with the stakeholders. And I think that's part of like leaders being a part, you know, leaders in a school district, like having spent time in the building, spending time within the community, spending time, you know, it's not just about having them fill out a survey, but it's also about like really being a part and being invested in those relationships with those stakeholders can make a big difference in as you like decide on change and stuff like that. And then I think the other point that I was going to kind of like comment on something you said with like the change, like having the right kind of soil. I think that there is this sense of urgency that educators and educational leaders feel because we feel this like big, you know, that there are big issues with kids, big things that need to change because we want to help them so bad. And I think that's where that action, that wanting to go jump to the solution really comes from, is that like we don't want kids to toil in like, you know, hardship or even just like the mental health issues or even just fall further behind academically. And so like I think there's a sense of urgency that's behind many educators. And so like, I think that's what makes that process of making big change happen, is that you have to have that patience to know that like in the long run, it will help. But I think that for me, I think about day to day, what does that mean for Susie in my classroom, you know, on Tuesday? Like, what does that mean? You know? And so sometimes I think that's where that disconnect with when change is happening is just like, okay, but that's great for next year. But right now, currently I have, what can I do now? And I think that's because oftentimes educators are like, okay, what is that? What can I do tomorrow to like help better?
And you know? That's where short-term strategies comes in. And I know branching, like that's a big part of Branching Minds and the way that you implement both in classrooms and in schools, is that you're helping to set a big picture vision. And then you're also providing support to teachers tomorrow, what like with a potential change. And I think that's a big part also around just the professional development process, is that in professional developments, it's really important that teachers have a moment there to reflect on their own practice, to learn something completely new, because we all have so much, like there's just, we don't have time every single day to spend, like, to expand our brains and learn all of these new techniques and strategies. And then I also, like, that's great, but I can't revolutionize my lesson plan for tomorrow. But can I walk away from a professional development session with one new thing to try tomorrow or two new things to try next week? And that's, you know, I'm hired as an external facilitator for a lot of these sessions because I can bring that to a smaller group and think, use a little bit more of a train the trainer model, where my folks that are attending that session, we're going to do something together that is likely new for you. And then how can you turnkey that? And tomorrow, do that in your classroom. And it's really important for me as a facilitator also, is I create really simple agendas that can be used then by a principal during a principal's meeting within their school, can be used with a teacher with their PLC in the afternoon. So how can we be providing these really clear and simple tools so that folks can practice something new every day, recognizing that, like, it's the 1% better by James Clear. Like, and I'll share that with you as a resource at the end. But how can I change one thing today that eventually will get us into a place where we are building a culture where change is comfortable, not uncomfortable, and change is accepted and celebrated, and then we can bring about those massive changes to our MTSS structure.
When you said that, it started to make me think about how, like, you know, big, large scale change often is a good model for even some smaller, on the smaller scale, like building level, like the district level change, system level change, but then also, like, what does that mean for that principal going into his building when they're like talking about mission and vision for that building and having, you know, because you dissipate that 5-year strategic plan down to, you know, a plans at a yearly level for districts. And so I feel like that can help guide that process, or even that leader too. Like, you have your superintendents and your large scale leaders, but even just like training some of those like building level leaders to start thinking in that direction. And that, I mean, I think that, I mean, for years I have said, like, leaders need better training and need to be able to have that, be visionaries, but also be like very practical too. Like, there needs to be a mix of both. And so I think that's just made me think about like how that does dissipate down to the classroom level and just in small ways. And so I appreciate that.
Do you know
that.
America's, do you cook at all? Do you know America's Test Kitchen?
Yes. Yes.
So America's Test Kitchen, like my one of my favorite images that I use during strategic planning is one where they're baking chocolate chip cookies, and they show what happens when we use cold butter, room temperature butter, and melted butter. What happens when we use this, like, one egg, two egg, or three egg? What happens when we bake the cookies at 300, 350, and 375. And so they show you an image of all the different cookies and what they turn out to when they've modified minimally the different ingredients. And the reality is that when we're implementing something in our schools, each school is already a little different. Each school has a different strength. Each leader within a school has a slightly different strength, right? And so how can we think about change and not you already have, as a leader at a district, you already have the ability to test small things very easily within each of your schools. How can you do that in the beginning of a larger strategic planning project? Waiting for this magical day where we know all of the answers, where the conditions are perfect, where we have no urge, like there's no fire happening, like hopefully not a literal fire, but we recognize that there are little fires everywhere. That day is never going to come. And so using the word pilot has such a bad connotation now in many, many school districts and just many organizations out there generally. But how can we start piloting parts of the change early so that we can be getting data back? We can be reflecting on what's working and not working and making it better for when we want to roll out a larger scale change. There's not feeling that permission, and I'll use that word because I know it's kind of a heavy one, but feeling the permission to make small changes, the permission to fail, as we talked about earlier, like all of those pieces, that doesn't happen overnight. And so we have to be practicing the change in different schools.
Wow. I am enjoying just hearing you talk about change in really like practical ways, but also there's a sense of like having to kind of just understand the process of how change actually happens. Cause I think sometimes we can talk about change and all that stuff, but like, I think that I'm curious about when you are invited into a school district, what is kind of the things that prompts people to like bring someone in? Because I've been a part of like strategic planning, and usually it kind of is mostly internal, but I'm just curious about like what prompts a district to bring you in?
It's like dun dun dun. Ah! Consultant. Yeah, there's sometimes that music precedes when I'm entering. Typically, it's because a leader knows that they want to take on something that either they have not done before, they have done before, and it's been really difficult. It's high profile. They're really concerned about being able to successfully do this huge project. And they want some level of objectivity. And a lot of times I'm working on projects that if they don't go well, the superintendent will likely have to step down. And those projects feel very personal then, because it is people's livelihood and their ability to have their vision come to life. And so what I try to do is, a lot of times I don't have a long-term stake in that area, in that community. I have a very short-term stake in that community. And so I really want to create an environment where during the course of maybe it's a 12-week project, maybe it's a 6-month project, where that leader can relax into leading, because I'm doing a lot of the heavy lifting for them behind the scenes. So a lot of times that is me designing the process, creating the change management schedule the process and the steps and all the details. I'm creating the communication plan. So when to communicate what to whom. And as we started in the beginning, it's like everyone's already got a job. And so a lot of times the leader doesn't have someone in their cabinet, or even maybe a couple layers below, that has the time, energy, space, and experience to be able to take this on as a task. And learning how to create a strategy, like, it's very different, the skill set to create strategies as it is to have a successful implementation. And in my mind, you want the majority of the folks at your district to be really good and successful implementers of that change, which involves a ton of strategy in and of itself. And so a lot of times the knowledge base around strategy is not as much there mm-hmm. as it is the knowledge base around implementation. So it's sometimes, like, if you're only going to have to do something once or twice as a school district, don't hire for it, right? You can learn so much from a great external consultant, and a great consultant, and I'm also speaking about me, but a great consultant is someone who walks themselves out of a job because they are training and developing, coaching, mentoring, encouraging an entire group of people within a school district to learn a new skill set. Mm-hmm. I don't want to lead every single curriculum adoption that a school district does. I don't want to be there year after year for a new academic program at it. Like, I don't want to do that. I want to do it the first year, have a crew of folks that I'm working with side by side, and encourage each of them to find their own voice, to investigate, to learn, to go out, find new research that even I don't know. Mm-hmm. One of my favorite things about my career so far is that I don't do very many of the same projects again and again and again and again. So I'm never going to become that expert. Mm-hmm. I am here to be an expert in the process, but I want everyone in that district to be able to feel the freedom to build that expertise themselves. We never know what we're going to grow into. And so for a lot of times, these projects are that thing that helps a teacher reimagine herself in the classroom, or helps a leader reimagine herself as a leader, because now they have something new that they're learning and it becomes exciting again.
Yeah. Well, and I was just thinking too, like, you know, I've been through administrative training and, you know, have a degree to show for it, but there is a little bit of some of that, like, the strategic planning part, like, that's a small piece of what it means to be a school leader, or even just like an educator. I think there's parts that, like, we aren't necessarily, like, that's not the primary part of our training. And so, like, that's a skill set to develop. And so when you are able to bring somebody in to, like, help develop those skills amongst your team and leaders, like, that, it only, like, expands what you can do and what those people can do in their careers and even further. So I think that's fantastic in the way to, like, support education, is to provide those skills in those different systems, because those systems are better for it in the long run, and those educators themselves.
I think of it as a muscle. Sorry, I'll cut you off real quick.
No, you're fine.
I think of it as a strategy muscle. And so a lot of times that's an underworked muscle. There's a lot of discussion out there. I know we talked a little bit about vulnerability in the beginning, but how does one actually apply the learnings of Brené Brown to being a leader? That connection point is strategy. How does someone take Jim Collins, take Simon Sinek, take a lot of these leaders that are out there preaching to pop culture around how to actually make change happen, how to actually be a leader, like taking all of that and contextualizing it for an individual district or school and implementing a lot of the lessons, like why leaders eat last, or starting with why. I'm giving two examples from Simon Sinek, being able to take those and then apply them really specifically to a problem or challenge that is happening today. That's what happens during strategic planning. Mm. And so it's creating the space to take what we know we want to be, like taking some of those great practices and like creating a space for individuals to try to learn how to implement them every single day.
Mm. Okay. There's so many more questions that I could ask. You talk a lot about joy. And one of the things I love ending our conversations on just like a fun question. And these days, lots of people are heading back to school. And I mean, I'm gathering that you maybe enjoy school, but maybe if you didn't, or were you someone who was excited about going back to school every year? Okay. So then what is you're nodding your head for, so what was your favorite part about going back to school every year?
Well, I would get one haircut a year and it would coincide with going back to school in the Jewish holidays in the fall. And so I would always get my new haircut. And so like, I always feel like a new me. My foot grew quite often. I would get a new pair of Doc Martens because I was that alterna kid, until high school when I wore the same pair that I still wear today. So those two things. And then I loved meeting my teachers on the first day of school. Like there was always one that I was afraid of, one that I knew was going to become a pal, one that I had had a year before. And I'm such a teacher's human. I'm an only child. And so I've always been more comfortable with adults. I'm still more comfortable with adults, like adults, like 70 or 80 year olds now. but that was also my favorite thing. So it was like, I got to be a new me for that school year and I got to meet all my new teachers.
That's fun. I just was thinking about how back to school time, it's nearing sadly, like we're, at the end of July while we're recording this. And I was just thinking, man, there's so many memories. I feel like everyone has sort of a memory about like that this time of year. So thank you for answering that. And mm-hmm. thank you for being here. This was a fantastic conversation. I think it'll be really helpful for listeners as they like people who are thinking about big system change or even smaller level too. I think it'll just be inspiring as well. So thank you so much.
Awesome. Thank you. I hope folks were able to pull a nugget from this wide-ranging conversation to like understand your own personal relationship with change and something that, maybe you can try the next day. Thank you. Thank you, Larissa, for being such a wonderful host today and for asking me all the good questions.
Thanks for listening to School and Around, a podcast hosted by Branching Minds. And don't forget to subscribe to this podcast to hear all our future episodes. As well, if you're enjoying our content, would you do us a favor and rate and review our podcast on iTunes? This helps others find our podcast and let us know how much you love what we're creating. Branching Minds is an educational technology company using learning sciences and technology to help districts effectively personalize learning through MTSS. To learn more about us, check out our website, branchingminds.com, or follow us on Twitter, Facebook, or LinkedIn @branchingminds.